The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. Yes, indeed, it is your turn. Ask the pastor. Call us at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Andy Jacow is our guest today at Bethany Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia. Good morning, Pastor. Oh, I should say good afternoon, Pastor, right?
Well, because right, you're Eastern about time. 5 minutes past the hour for us here in the East Coast, so yes.
That's right. And your state making news today with the lockdown of Virginia Tech.
Oh, yeah, that's guns and Virginia Tech, two things that you definitely do not want to hear in the news, especially after the previous incident. So fortunately, it doesn't seem like anybody is hurt. We just have a sighting of a possible gunman, and so we're holding this up in prayer today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Have you had a chance to go on vacation with your family this summer yet?
We went up to the tropical paradise that is Buffalo, New York.
And did you go to Niagara Falls?
Yep, up in Niagara Falls area. That's where my family is from. And
oh, really?
We visited some family there and some family out in Toronto and Canada.
You take the kids over to Camp Pioneer?
No, I didn't get a chance. A good friend of mine is going to be taking up the directorship of that, Alex Knowles, who's pastor at St. Peter's Northridge right now. And that's where I went to grade school. There's Lutheran connections all over the place.
All over the place. I like that part of the country myself. I think it's terrific. And when we visited Niagara Falls, I was so impressed. You'd think that with all the hype about it, it should be let down. Not a chance.
No.
It's amazing.
It is.
It is. God's creation.
Yeah. The Jago family reunion, in fact, was held this past weekend out in Burkholz, New York, which is just outside of Niagara Falls.
I mispronounced your name. Andy Jago. Okay,
oh, well,
Jago. I was saying Jago.
We're used to both pronunciations.
Are you really? Yeah.
Yeah.
And how's things in the parish there at Bethany, Alexandria?
Oh, a lot more active than you'd think over the summer. We just got past our vacation Bible school, and we did. We're doing some community neighborhood walks for evangelism. Our first one was pretty well. I mean, we had some good volunteers for that, and hoping to get some more this Saturday.
There's a story that appears this morning on the Christian Post website. In fact, it just popped up moments ago.
Yeah,
11:07 a.m. Eastern Time. It's hardly news that men and women act differently, but a new poll indicates that gone are the days when women were traditionally the spiritual leader of the family home. Pollster and researcher George Barna released a report on religious changes in America this week, revealing some surprising results. Barna concludes that women have experienced a significant spiritual change in the past two decades. Women today are attending church and Sunday school less, reading the Bible less, and consider their faith less important in their lives, according to the new survey. The Barna report also shows that over the last two decades, women have become less likely to hold traditional views of God as the all-knowing creator and ruler of the universe. Women today are less likely to see the devil as a real person, considering him more of a symbol of evil. Women used to put men to shame in terms of their orthodoxy of belief and the breadth and consistency of their religious behavior. No more. The religious gender gap has substantially closed, said Barna in his report. Now, from your perspective in the pulpit, are you witnessing that in your parish?
Well, not necessarily, although I find myself in Bible classes and the reports that I get back from our small group Bible studies more and more, especially with the younger couples. We are talking more about homosexuality, creation of the world, different things that perhaps Orthodox Christians, not Eastern Orthodox, but those that hold the traditional beliefs, you know, we're finding more and more that we're covering that material. It's not just a given that people accept all this, and that you know, teaching for all. There's a lot of questions that are out there, and further teaching is definitely needed.
It states here that we can posit that while tens of millions of Americans seem to be wrestling with their faith, what to believe and how to experience and express it, women have been more radically redefining their faith than men in the past two decades. Barna comments that women who say they are born again are not getting their religion from Sunday school or the Bible. I wonder where they're getting it.
Yeah, right. It's a very good question.
In
perhaps
his,
television? We'll have to read on here.
In his commentary on the findings, Barna said that churches can no longer expect women to stay in the pews. In fact, men and women are now equally likely to read the Bible during a typical week, thanks to the recent decline in Bible reading among females, he said. The amount of men reading the Bible in a typical week has gone up by 1% to 41%. For women, it's fallen by 10% to 40%. Men have not undergone as many changes in religion as women have in the past two decades. In fact, any changes noted today finds that men are likely to either remain steady in their religious faith or increase in numbers. Barna did find out that the number of men attending church services has fallen only 6% in 20 years compared to 11% for women. He speculates that churches will have to change and engage in bold action to meet the needs of a changing world. The frightening reality for churches is that the people they have relied upon as the backbone of the church can no longer be assumed to be available and willing when needed, as they were in days past. And Barna poses two questions in his commentary without any answers. He says, if women become less of a mainstay in what occurs within churches, will ministries respond by increasing the male friendliness of the proceedings? And as women become less front and center, will men be pressured to upgrade their church involvement?
To man up, as it were.
Yeah. Eras of change, such as that in which we live today, demand alert and courageous leadership to understand the times, know what to do, and engage in bold action. I don't think you're as concerned about this as he is. Do I get that impression?
Oh, well, I hope not.
Well, it sounds like things are going pretty well at your church.
They're a good roadmap for us. And, you know, it's a good to take the temperature of the current cultural climate. I don't think we quite needed Barna to tell us that there's, you know, there's decreasing involvement in going to church on a regular basis and attending Bible study on a regular basis, even among practicing Christians. I think we see that. I think the surprise is, well, you know, you were expecting mom to continually drag the family out and be the leader in the family to do that. And, well, we can't really count on that anymore. And that's what's new about this survey.
Mm. And to what do you attribute that? What do you think?
Well, I don't know if I would attribute it any more or less, you know, than what we see among men. And if you lose the male leadership in the family, the spiritual, if they're unplugged and disconnected, and it's just the wife haranguing them to come to church, of course there's not going to be very deep commitment that's there. And the fact that women are kind of catching up to that, I don't think that's too much of a surprise. You know, if I think when you target as a church, you know, you want people to, obviously our commission by the Lord is to make disciples, regardless of what gender they are or how old they are and that sort of thing. We need to target the whole family and maybe look at this and think about more holistic ways, not just manning up and targeting the men and doing manly things, going out and outdoor adventures and that sort of thing, or just targeting the women and taking a softer general approach or whatever the current marketing is, you know, but taking a holistic approach, a discipling approach, word and sacraments, we say, in the Lutheran Church, you know, and try to connect people as a family with those things.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email the studio, KFUO, at KFUO.org. So, on average, what percentage of your congregation attends church weekly on a regular basis?
Oof, well, I haven't looked at
that. What percentage of your congregation would be considered the regulars?
Boy. I don't know. We have... When you compare on the books, we probably have about 300-350. Average Sunday attendance is about 170. So I'm terrible. I just said this to the congregation this past Sunday. I am absolutely awful with math. we had the feeding of the 5,000 as our gospel lesson for this past Sunday. So that was my confession to the congregation. There's certainly a gap there. You'll find a gap in most every church, and you have your folks for the most part, that are there. You have your percentage that are active, engaged, regularly attending, regularly contributing to the ministry on different levels.
That's been said to be the 20%.
Okay.
Pulling all the weight for the other 80.
Right. You know, and then that's the struggle of finding the ways to engage them. Now, you know, there's we don't have a way to do that by compulsion, though. We have ways that we can entice and attract and try to, you know, put the word out there, put needs out there in front of people. What I found is it's never just one thing. And it's always God working, and you're always surprised by how God works. You'll do something like a servant event. This past year, we sent a team out to Haiti to try and do some works of mercy down there, and working with other Christian organizations down there. And we're doing that again in the spring. That reactivated several church members, you know, that were previously, maybe they were saying, who knows, maybe they were just sitting on the fence looking for some way to come in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, this is what it's all about. This is what we need to do as disciples of Jesus. And that connected, and off they went. But you could, there's no, I will never write a book on how to do that, because there's so many different things that happen in the life of a church. And you find out more and more, it's nothing because of any of your clever words or clever way to gimmicky it or market it or anything like that. It's always the work of the Holy Spirit, and the Spirit goes where it wills.
And I wonder if there are some members who consider once a month to be regular attendance.
That's entirely possible. It's certainly not what we preach, and it's not what we teach, and not what we say out there publicly. But yeah, I'd imagine that you know God gets mixed in there with other things.
Are we perhaps too lenient with people who casually attend worship, just part of the time?
Well, you know, when you say that, I think of pastors. Of course, when we get together, we could fantasize about how we're going to crack the whip and drive up attendance, you know, through threatening and, you know, different things like that. But you can't really do that without really, you know, and it's never under compulsion. We have to minister through the gospel, and ultimately that's long-term going to be more effective. But do people still, I mean, I get lazy in different things in my life, and do people need the reminders of how to be good disciples, how to be faithful to the commandment of remembering the Sabbath day and keeping God first in your life? Absolutely, we need those reminders, and that needs to come up in our, can't be, along with the gospel is the motivation, that is the motivation, but along with that is the instruction, the direction, the guidance for people to do that.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bill, you're on KFUO with Pastor Andy Jago.
Yes, good morning to both of you.
Thank you.
The comment I want to make, I'm not trying to, you know, put too much emphasis on me and my life and everything, but years ago when I was younger, I don't think as many people were involved in those, like, sports activities and all these fads have been going on the last maybe 20 years. People would, they like to be entertained, but I think nowadays people want to be involved and entertained so much they're into ballet dancing and the soccer team. And years ago, women didn't care much for football. Now you got these people, they call football widows or whatever. Now everybody's in football and all this stuff. And they would rather get up 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, camp out of a building, and go to a sports game or a rock concert or a sale at the Lotus store or at the local store, and then they get up and go to church. And I just think that people just don't want to sit still and listen to God's word, which is like spiritual medicine to them. That would actually their salvation is involved. Where if somebody said, "Well, you got to take this medicine, or you're going to die tomorrow," they would be glad to do that. But the spiritual part just doesn't seem to be there. They don't seem to want to hear God's word, which is going to bring them salvation. They would rather get involved in soccer and all these other activities. And I'll hang up just to listen to what you have to say about it. Thank you.
What about that, Pastor?
Excellent points. And two thoughts occur. Number one, the busyness, and number two, you know, taking care of your spiritual self like you take care of your physical self. With the second point that's there, you know, your body tells you when something is wrong. You know, when you pay attention, because there's usually some physical kind of pain involved, and for us lazy human creatures, that's sometimes the necessary thing, the indication that you need to do something about it. You need to regular exercise. You need to eat a little, make some better food choices, you know, and that sort of thing. Then the spiritual self, you know, when you, it's harder to put, to talk about the symptoms of spiritual dryness. And you know, feeding your soul as well as your body, and when you're not connected to Jesus, when you're not in the Word and experiencing the Word incarnate, when you're not going to church on a regular basis, I would even add in there receiving Holy Communion on a regular basis. You know, there's the spiritual symptoms of dryness, how God feels distant from you, different things like that. They're harder to put a handle on. There's usually not some kind of physical pain that's attached. Although, you know, there are times where God may give you a little smack upside the head to tell you what you're doing and to get you on the right track. But again, it's not concrete. It's not a, something that you can point to with 100% certainty. But it's equally as important, to our lives. Now, with the busyness, I'm the father of two small girls. They're only, they just completed kindergarten and second grade, looking at first and third grade next year. And in any given week, we have church choir, Girl Scouts, the horseback riding in Maryland, and occupational therapy for our oldest, as well as tutoring for her as well, because she has some special needs. Now, somehow we fit that all into our schedule and try to juggle that with everything that's going on. And, you know, as I find myself at home saying what I hope that other parents say around our church, and when I try to lead by example, I try to say this from the pulpit and in our studies too, is that, you know, when it comes time to make a decision, you know, God comes first. We have to have balance to our lives to be sure, and we're not going to neglect one part of the life, but overall, if it's a decision between the special event for church choir and Girl Scouts, where we're going to choose, you know, the church choir, and we're going to keep that as our first duty, as our first obligation, and as our first joy in our lives. That's a hard, I tell you, the juggling act, and I can't even imagine what it's going to be like as they get older and we get into the sports. And then I have to deal with the coaches that want to, you know, schedule games on Sunday mornings and things like that. I'm not looking forward to that. Just imagining that gives me a lot of sympathy for the parents that whose children are talented. They want to develop these physical gifts that are there. But we ask them, like when they're in confirmation class especially, and then when we do other special things in the church, you know, we guide this very gently and say, look, there's a choice that needs to be made, and we need to balance our lives. And there may be one or two times that you choose to do the sports event, but you know, overall, we know what God expects of us, and we find that God blesses us whenever we do, make those choices that are helpful for our spiritual, for our spirit, and for our soul. And that's a gentle thing. We try not to, you know, be too judgmental, because Lord, I'm not too judgmental, because I see what goes into all this from a parent's point of view, and you know, it's a major headache, but. And mistakes are going to be made, and we ask for God's forgiveness, but it's something that you need to do, and it's something that is there for our well-being. God instructs us in this way, not because he wants to be he's a killjoy and wants to ruin our fun in our lives. No, because he knows this is going to be the best thing for us, for our development as people, as human beings, the best way to prepare us for heaven, even.
Perhaps one of the strongest influences might be that over the last 50 years, Sunday has gone from being a set-aside day to becoming just another day in our culture.
That's true.
And could that be a strong influence, too?
Well, you know, what I relate that to is trying to do a church service on Ascension Day, which always falls on a Thursday. In our American culture, that's not a day off from work. People still go to work on that day, and they'll have to make a decision as to, you know, if that's a high feast of the church or not. I may attend some other church. I don't schedule a service here at Bethany. We get Ascension Day in the following Sunday, because that's a hard thing to fight in our culture. It's a hard pull. And but that still frustrates me. If we were living in France, and church attendance and Bible study attendance on the average, probably a little bit lower than here in the United States. But there it was. I was in May of 2005 there, and it was just amazing how things shut down on that Thursday. It's still a holiday, whether people are going to church or not. And so you at least have the environment around you corresponding, if you choose to make that a high holy day, to go to church. Well, you know, I'm looking for that now, and it's getting harder and harder in our American culture that's super busy and we're committed to many different things. It's getting harder and harder to have the environment support the choices that you're making for your family, the spiritual choices that are there.
And could the economy be an influence as well, because perhaps mom and dad are both working, and they're exhausted on weekends, and they've got those other things to schedule, and they're just too tired to go to church. Or maybe they're even scheduled on a Sunday when church is happening. They have to work on that day.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have such admiration for people that I perceive that just seem to have it together. They're able to balance all aspects of their lives. I have not found that yet. Maybe one week we're there's a lot of things going on in church, and maybe the next week it's hard to take time for yourself, because then all of a sudden, you know, the dishes pile up and the laundry piles up and that sort of thing. And here, you know, my wife and I both work, but my wife works part time, and we try, we try to balance it as best as we can, but it is messy. It's certainly not perfect. I admire people that have it together.
We've got, Barna did a study by faith groups. He calls them tribes. And he identifies born-again Christians as one member of the tribe, self-identified Christians as another, Roman Catholics in the U.S. And perhaps we should focus here on changes among Protestants. They don't have a separate group called Lutherans. So
yeah.
I guess that's right. The closest we can associate with here. He says that Protestants are also redefining the nature of their faith, as seen in the fact that all six religious behaviors changed significantly, and five of the eight religious beliefs tracked followed suit. He says the four major church-related behaviors have all suffered in the past two decades. Church attendance in a typical week has dropped by 5 percentage points down to 52%. Adult Sunday school attendance has declined 11 points to 25%. Volunteerism is off by 11 points, now standing at 26%. And being unchurched has risen from 17 to 24%.
Yeah.
The likelihood of attending a large church, 600 or more people, grew by 7 percentage points. 14% of Protestant adults now align with such a church. That's double the proportion discovered in 1991, but unchanged from a decade ago. Personal Bible reading undertaken, apart from church events, has dipped by 7 percentage points since 1991, now down to 57%. Barna says the good news is that this represents a rebound from the 48% registered in 2001. We'll comment on that perhaps when we come back, Pastor, and give you some more statistics here as we take a look at this recent Barna survey on Ask the Pastor. We're not limiting the topic to that, however. Whatever your question is, we'll address it here on Ask the Pastor with Pastor Andy Jago from Bethany Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
This is John Fuller for Focus on the Family. Coming up this weekend, improving financial communication in your marriage. Do you know your money personality? How to get inactive kids to exercise more this summer. And encouragement for single moms. All that and more on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
You've probably heard several states have cut or are planning to cut tax funding of Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest chain of abortion mills. The organization could regain this funding if they'd simply stop killing unborn babies through abortion. Instead, here's evidence of what we'll likely see them cutting in the future. New Hampshire Planned Parenthood is cutting birth control and pelvic exams. These are services they brag about when they want to take attention away from them doing mostly abortions. In Wisconsin, services jeopardized will likely be non-abortion products also. Why don't they just cut abortion? This sacred cow is also the cash cow of Planned Parenthood. Abortion generates tons of income for this giant of the abortion industry. They'll go down fighting.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Establishment of Religion. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. U.S. troops in Afghanistan have spent 10 weeks converting a building at Kandahar Airfield into an Islamic center. At the dedication ceremony, Base Commander Brigadier General Jeffrey Kendall said,
"We celebrate the establishment of this center as a place for Muslims within our base community to practice their faith in a solemn and reverent atmosphere."
Others at the ceremony said the project shows that U.S. and other coalition forces are not trying to change the Afghan people or their religion. A federal appeals court has ruled against Christian groups who challenged a non-discrimination policy at California State Universities. The policy says officially recognized campus groups cannot discriminate on the basis of religion or sexual orientation. A Christian fraternity and a sorority said the policy violated their religious freedom, but the appeals court disagreed. I'm Steve Coleman.
God's provision for life and salvation comes by His effort as a gift of His grace to the world. Faith believes in God's goodness and mercy before, in the middle, and even after the storm. But storms come, fear comes, and with them we're tempted to take our eyes off the one who walks on the water for us.
Pastor Gregory Seltz, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
This week on Lamplighter Theater.
I'm standing here.
Oh, we have a new servant. I mean, a roommate.
This is a record for shipwreck. The ship was designated to carry prisoners.
We're free! Take over the ship! Turn the ship! We're heading into the rock!
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
It's Ask the Pastor on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Our guest is Pastor Andy Jago from Bethany Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia. Before we went to the break, we told you about some changes among Protestants in this recent Barna poll. And the first one, the four major church-related behaviors have all suffered in the past two decades. Church attendance in a typical week has dropped by 5 percentage points, down to 52%. Adult Sunday school attendance has declined 11 points to 25%, volunteerism off by 11 points, now standing at 26%, and being unchurched has risen from 17 to 24%. Apparently that means there's Protestants out there that just stopped going to church, that had been Protestants.
Well, it also means that's one thing. It also means we have a lot of work to do. I think demographics, you know, that coupled with demographics too, I'd also like to take a look at, you know, different populations moving into our city centers and into the suburbs, you know, different populations that may not be traditionally Protestant Christian, may be Roman Catholic or may be non-religious or religion of a different stripe, Islam or Hinduism. That could also be a growing trend, and I know it certainly seems that way here in Northern Virginia. There may be a growing trend elsewhere, too.
It also says that the number of Protestants who have made a personal commitment to Jesus Christ that they consider to still be important in their life today has risen by 8 percentage points to 86%. Are you surprised by that?
A little, yeah. That's pretty good.
Meanwhile, Protestants are 8 points less likely to agree that Satan is merely a symbol of evil, not a living entity, than they were in 1991. About half of them, 47%, accept that characterization of Satan. Does that
startle
you?
Now, which one? That he's a real, or that he's a symbol?
That he's a symbol.
Okay.
47%. That means that almost half, perhaps half of the people in your parish, see Satan as merely a symbol.
It's possible. Hopefully not because of anything I've said.
Adopting a personal responsibility for evangelism has increased slightly among Protestants from 33 to 38% over the past 20 years, and the proportion of Protestant adults that meets the born-again criteria has risen from 53 to 65%.
Yeah. That is not terribly surprising, again, considering some of the demographics and... hopefully that's the product of successfully reaching those that are not Christian.
And then this final bullet point, the notion that the Bible is completely accurate in all of the principles it teaches is less popular among Protestants today. In 1991, 61% strongly believed that. Today, 56% hold that belief.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I thought the one thing I'd be zinged on today after reading the Christian Post this morning is Stephen Hawking and his television series on the Discovery Channel.
Hawking coming out
and saying, that he doesn't believe it. He thinks everything was can be explained by scientific principles, not necessarily that God created everything.
That's going to be a Discovery Channel program on Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. And we're going to discuss that tomorrow on our Creation Club segment with Pastor Warren Worth between 9 and 9:30 here on KFUO Radio. And we're going to get his response to that. We do a little creation show every Friday morning here for about a half hour. And we never run out of mainstreaming of evolutionary theory in the media. It's out there all the time.
You said that's on Fridays?
Yes, Friday mornings between 9 and 9:30. We're going to deal with that. I've got another story here, and perhaps it kind of piggybacks on what we're talking about, because it deals with denominational identity. There's a think piece by Sarah Hammaker titled, Breaking Up is Hard to Do When Congregations Leave Their Denominations. More and more conservative congregations are choosing to leave liberal denominations. Rarely does the opposite occur, with a liberal congregation withdrawing to unite with a more conservative denomination. Dr. Jeffrey Marlett, an associate professor of religious studies at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, says, I think conservative Christians generally take their faith seriously. They feel that it's better to stand by their faith and not become conformed to the ways of the world, which is why you see conservative congregations leaving liberal denominations and not vice versa.
Right. Well, I just have to say, I deal with this with colleagues of mine who really wrestle sometimes if their denomination moves away from the Bible, and then they wrestle with the decision, do I stay, and because this is where God has called me, and I stay in place, and I try to be the leaven here in the loaf and influence where things are from where I am, or is that irresponsible? Am I messing around with people's souls? Because we're not in an environment. The real struggle comes into place when suddenly the national denomination no longer teaches what you are teaching your people. And not just you individually, but I would go further there. In these cases, it's what the Church Catholic, small c, not Roman Catholic, but Catholic meaning universal, what the Church for the last 2,000 years uniformly has taught. And no longer conforms to that. So, if you're talking about serious issues, where there's things that are plain in the Bible that we're contradicting, then you have that decision. And I don't envy my colleagues that have to make that decision, and where they have to go, and where the Lord might be leading them through that. Because it's difficult. It's like if you have a your relationship, your ties, your retirement plan, you're connected. You don't stay in a denomination without being connected to the things that are there around you and the people that you love and that sort of thing. It's a messy, messy thing.
Timothy Beal is a professor of religion at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, and in this article, he states that the splits always have to do with theology, property, or worship practices.
Interesting.
For the 21st century church, a loss of denominational identity has contributed to these separations. In the United States, these conservative congregations pulling out of mainline denominations are part of a broader issue relating to the loss of denominational identity and coherence generally, says Douglas Jacobson, distinguished professor of church history and theology at Messiah College in Pennsylvania. Both liberal and conservative denominations across the board don't have the kind of loyalty or connectiveness with their congregations that they had 20 or 30 years ago. Part of that loss comes from the decrease in ethnic ties to certain denominations. Denominational identity has become less connected to family identity, which means people no longer belong to the same denomination as their parents or grandparents, says Beal. The trend toward innocuous, non-denominational names for churches, even if the congregation belongs to a denomination, also is loosening the national identity of denominations. Denominational labels are seen as pushing people away, and a non-denominational name is seen as more embracing, says Jacobson. Why do you think that is, Pastor?
Well, these are trends that we've been seeing, and you know, I could speculate. I could say, if I had to, I'd say that the increase of individualism. Just even no matter what denomination you're talking about, there's certain identifying vocabulary, insider talk, perhaps, that's there. Maybe, with our church, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, you got that through a system of schools and education all the way throughout this country. There's a certain vocabulary that we have that if one person says it, the other person, okay, and you know what you're talking about. There was some common ethnic ties that helped that as well. And then these days you do see a disintegration of that people are falling away from some of those things. I have, in terms of denominational vocabulary, our organist at our church, is the daughter of a Presbyterian pastor and grew up in that household. And so whenever we see something where we were both thinking along the same lines and something happens where it's just too much of a coincidence, she'll look at me and say, "See, Pastor, I was predestined to. We were predestined to do that." Presbyterians, of course, one of the key things is predestination, double predestination. It's in their vocabulary, mm-hmm. And we would laugh about that because we're both familiar with that. But I would imagine that among Presbyterians today, people would look at you and say, "What? What are you talking about?" And that would be that. If we were all going to the same school, attending the same camp, being immersed in your environment without that kind of thing, then you would have that more uniformity. But what happens is I think it's a struggle to bring people to a central place in your denomination more and more because of the way that life is in North America in, the 21st century. We have to find ways to take church with us, to maximize the amount of time that we have, whether it's an hour or 2 hours of folks during the course of the week, so that the more and more they're taking that culture that, what we're immersing ourselves in the Word of God and taking that with them, to their crazy busy job, taking it with them to summer camp, taking them with them in their travels around the world even. So, that's the struggle, and I think that's where my mentality is at, how I react to this news is Lord, show us a way that we could do that and do that better and do it well.
It's interesting because I know of two churches near my zip code anyway. One was a Baptist church that is now a Concord Church for All People. No Baptist mentioned there. And the other was an Assembly of God church, Southside Assembly of God, I think it was called, is now something like the South Point Christian Center. Mm-hmm. The word church isn't even used in their moniker.
Wow.
All denominations are dealing with this issue. Is there some baggage associated with some branding baggage there, calling yourself what you are, a Baptist church or an Assembly of God or a Lutheran church?
I guess it depends on what the mission of the church is. I mean, we don't shy away from the name Lutheran because we want, it's our desire that folks would be curious about that and we could teach people that. Mm-hmm. And we found that either people ignore it, you know, people who are not familiar with what Lutheran is, either they'll just ignore that part of our name, you know, and not, or else they'll just, I don't think, I haven't, you know, I'd like to be shown the, you know, if this is true or not, but, you know, I don't think that turns people away per se. And that there's any trouble with that branding, at least where we live. But some churches may have a purpose, a mission, specifically toward the unchurched. And the way that they gear their ministry is directly toward those, that population. And so maybe, you know, the, anything with the name church in it and that sort of thing, that's not how we're going to draw people's attention to us. So they'll think of something different. Is it something that I would personally do? I don't think so, although I don't rule that out. And I don't discourage people from experimenting with that and trying that, and maybe it'll work. I don't think that's, it's something that's sinful or wrong to go away to do that. Now, in the same, denominational loyalty, my goodness, I don't know. People are just saying, the other thing that goes with that, too, is that people are so mobile. And oftentimes, you know, I've heard from folks, well, you know, there isn't a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation that's within, you know, 25, 30 miles of where I've moved. You know, where should I go? And then so they may try out something that's close to what they're familiar with. And maybe still, you know, if they've been raised in a certain church, be faithful to that, but be somewhere else. It could be because of the life circumstances. Other times, marriage plays a factor in that. We see a lot of folks that in our congregation that do come from Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, Roman Catholic, even Jewish, and we become here even at Bethany a little bit of a melting pot in terms of people in their denominational backgrounds.
But that identity apparently isn't as important anymore to most people in the pews.
Or people, if you were to choose between your denomination and your spouse, mm-hmm. you know, the person you married, that's a very tough thing. And some people purposely go to different churches on Sunday. But for other people, the value is, well, all right, I may not like this, but I want us to stay together on Sunday. And I can't even imagine how hard that decision is.
So do you host what are sometimes called inquiry classes for people looking for a church and they want to discover what you're all about, or do you handle that on an individual basis?
Well, the answer to your question is yes.
Mm. Both ways.
We do. We have regular classes, but the people who are deployed here for just a short time from the military mm-hmm. Sometimes don't have, you know, the time to take 10 weeks to do the class, and right. So we find ways to work with people on the fly, as it were, and all right, what do you want to plug into, and then we'll work with them with whatever they want to plug into. So we try to have multiple points for people to kind of enter into our congregation and get involved. For some of the church activity that we have, you don't necessarily have to be a church member to do it. There's lots of things that we there's lots of room for people that we call willing workers. You know, so they maybe want to help out with a potluck or help out with different things that are going on in the church, but they, you know, may not be full-fledged members just yet for whatever reason.
When you're talking to perhaps a class of people from different traditions, do you try to make distinctions?
Oh, yes. Well, at the very beginning, the very first class I have.
Well, could you walk us through how you do that? Because we have people of various traditions listening to this program right now.
Okay.
I think they find it fascinating.
The very first thing I do is go around the table and, all right, what's your background? What do you think about Jesus? What do you think about the church? Mm-hmm. Not making any assumptions whatsoever. And everybody's got a story. And the other part of that is, well, how did the Spirit lead you here to Bethany? And sometimes it's just as, well, we're Missouri Synod Lutheran. We found you on our website. You were the first church that came up on Google search. So mm-hmm. there we go. all right then, you know, and I think the Holy Spirit works through the internet too, so that's fine. Others, though, come here from quite a, you know, quite a path, and sometimes having just incredible stories about how they fell away from church for a while, how the Spirit brought them back, how they put different people in their path, and then lo and behold, here they are at our door. And I was like, wow, look at the way the Lord works there. And then I always, that's the first class, and then we start with the other question we start off with is, okay, if you could just ask anything, which you can always in this class, but if you can ask, what are some things that you're curious about? And so we take down a list of things, and we try to get to that throughout the course of the class. And then the very last class is another opportunity. It's an open class to it's like this radio show. Ask the pastor. Mm-hmm. So I don't always teach the class. Sometimes it's a layperson now teaching the sessions in the middle. But I like to touch base at the beginning. And if I wasn't at the last class in the beginning, but I had the person who was leading it write down everyone's responses so that I could at least look at it and be prepared for that. And then I always come in at the very last session for the ask the pastor. You know, whatever you want to ask the pastor. It's never a dull class.
If you're going to make distinctions between denominations, would you rank it like this? There's Roman Catholic,
yep.
There's Protestant,
mm-hmm.
and there's Lutheran.
Yep, that's exactly. We're right there in the center. Our Lutheran confessions, which are the historical documents, you know, and I just did a class on the very first one, which's called the Augsburg Confession.
Mm-hmm.
Said at the Diet of Augsburg, I like to tell people that has nothing to do with what you're eating. that was a gathering of German princes, you know, to the emperor to explain what they believe, what their faith is. And in their explanation, they said, no, we're not chucking away the core tradition of the church. In fact, we want to maintain the apostolic tradition, the apostolic, you know, what comes to us from the apostles. And the Roman Catholic Church of that day had veered away from that. And then other Protestants and their reforms went too far. And then this is the middle ground. This is, we don't want to, we are still universal, and we're still Catholic. Small C again. But we are protesting. They were called Protestants initially, everybody. But we are very sacramental. You know, we believe in the power of God through the waters of baptism and through the body and blood and Holy Communion. We're not getting rid of that. That's something that we believe strongly in, and that's vital to the life of the church. But we conform everything to the Word of God. And if there are popes and councils and other church leaders that contradicted that Word, or lead people away from the grace of Christ, then no, we're going to reform those practices. We're going to come back to the Word of God and start over again. So that was the struggle back in the Middle Ages, and I dare say that that's still extremely relevant for how we talk to one another, how we dialogue with one another today. I'm involved with the local Lutheran-Roman Catholic dialogues, kind of fell into it. Where we got some of the area clergy getting together and discussing various issues based on what's being talked about nationally and internationally among these denominations. And it's a fascinating group, and I'm there as Lutheran clergy to represent what we believe, but also to reach out and to try and understand where other people are coming from too. To not just speak my vocabulary and speak the words that I know. I can talk about justification by grace through faith alone, but to explain what that means, to explain how that works in the life of the church from my perspective, in my personal life. You know, that's what the fruit of that dialogue is, and I think it's a very valuable thing, something that denominations should not give up on. You know, whether or not we come to some kind of agreement to work with one another, well, that's beside the point. I'd like us to, you know, at least be talking to one another, explaining what we believe to one another.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. James, you're on KFUO with Pastor Andy Jago.
Could you briefly, Pastor, kind of explain what the treaties of the power of the primacy of the Pope is in the Book of Concord and to the Prince's, I think it was part of the small card articles, but I'd like for you to kind of talk a little bit about it and explain it to me.
Okay, well,
and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah, no, that's one of the more controversial pieces there, because we talk about the tyranny of the Pope. And what, just to sum up what that means, it just means that the Pope has the authority to burden people's consciences, to make them do things that is against their conscience to do. The most concrete example of that in the Middle Ages, perhaps still today, is forcing clergy to be celibate and not to marry or have families. You burden people's consciences. That's not in the Bible. At least we would argue it's not in the Bible. It's not in the early traditions of the church. So if it's not in the Bible, it's not in the early traditions of the church to have a pope come up centuries later and say, this is what we are doing now, and this is what you have, what you're obligated to do. Otherwise, you're committing a sin. That's the tyranny of that, and that's what's explained in the Treatise of the Power and Primacy of the Pope. And is that still a valid document for dialogue today? Absolutely. I mean, it may offend some ears, but I think these days our current Pope, Pope Benedict, is looking for people to be frank and people to be real about what they believe and what they're going to accept and not accept. And that's really how we're going to move forward in our dialogue with one another.
Hmm. So it's a tradition that was set up by man, doesn't have any biblical basis.
Yes, there's two, there's two Latin phrases that are used in there a lot, but it's basically, divine right and human right. We want to make sure that the church, we are obligated to follow things that Christ has established, that God has established. That's divine right. Those are the customs of the church that are established by divine right. Things that are established by human right, they're important. The traditions and customs of the church are important. Conformity across our denomination, important. But necessary for salvation? No, not necessary for salvation. And when you start saying that, then you're starting to burden people's consciences unnecessarily.
Fascinating. Interesting that you're involved in that study and dialogue.
Well, I'm learning a lot from it. I really am. And just about how complicated the... you would think with a very heavily centralized organization, the Roman Catholic Church, it would be a piece of cake to understand, accountability and understand all those things. But it's a lot more complicated than that, because you have all these different houses. In our dialogue, there are people that work with the diocese, but then are people who are Franciscan and work with their own order and their own house. And how those two communicate and work together, well, I could go on about it. I'm learning a lot from it.
Well, fascinating. Andy Jago, pastor of Bethany Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia, our guest today on Ask the Pastor. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, Moments of Assurance with Pastor Mark Hawkinson on listener-supported KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.